Traditionally, it's been difficult to build up the long-term care workforce. People in the past have been paid less. They're less willing to specialize in the field. So it's always been a challenge to develop a quality workforce and maintain it. That's one of the issues. And boy, I tell you what, we've got all these, we got a lot of people in that may well be in need of long-term care, nursing home care. Barbara Bowers, Professor Barbara Bowers, our guest today, Associate Dean in Research and with the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Nursing, has come by to talk with us about this whole issue and certainly to talk with you about long-term care and some of the employment issues that have come up with it. So if you're maybe involved in long-term care yourself, or maybe you may be in need of it or have family members who are, whatever the case, join in with your questions and comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org, and we'll be glad to get you on. Dean Bowers, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Great. Thanks, Larry.
We have a problem here in terms of numbers?
Well, there are a number of problems. I would be willing to bet that most of the listeners out there are thinking about this from the perspective of themselves, family members, friends who are in need of long-term care services. And long-term care generally includes nursing homes, but there's a lot of alternatives to long-term care. Assisted living, retirement communities, home care. Anybody who needs care over a long period of time.
And what have been the issues in terms of getting enough people into this?
Yeah. As probably a lot of people are aware, there is a real shortage of nurses in particular, but healthcare workers in general now, and its projections are that it's going to get worse. But this has been a chronic problem in nursing homes in particular, probably for a lot of reasons. We always survey incoming nursing students to ask them how many are interested in taking care of older people and working in long-term care settings. And we have at least some who are interested in working with older people, but very few people raise their hand when I ask about nursing homes. It's seen as a real second-class place. It just isn't very appealing. And there's been research looking at physicians, physical therapists, occupational therapists, all the other healthcare workers that are needed, and it's not a popular career choice. So we're working hard, and there are a number of national and state efforts ongoing to try to increase the appeal and the interest for people in long-term care. But there are some problems in the industry. It's not well reimbursed, much lower reimbursement rate than hospitals or other settings. So that translates into people getting, on average, about 80% of the pay you would get if you worked in another setting like a hospital. So that's a problem.
Well, yeah, it's a big problem, especially if you have your choice.
Right, right. And most people who work in long-term care are very committed. They're working there despite the fact that they're getting less money. And if you look at the frontline workers who provide most of the care, they're really low-wage workers. Many of them don't have health benefits. They don't have pensions. And they get pretty low wages.
Well, you know, and I've had some experience with nursing homes, for example. I had family members who were in nursing homes, and I'm happy to say that the people that I dealt with or who were dealing with the people that I knew were caring individuals, and really it was a wonderful experience for the people that I knew who were in those homes.
Yeah, and I have to confirm that. I think there's been some unfortunate press, a fair amount of it, on abuses by nursing home workers. That always makes the headlines. It's dramatic news. But in fact, I would say, you know, I have talked to hundreds and hundreds of workers in long-term care, in particular nursing assistants, and they are the most committed, caring group of people. Don't have a lot of support for continuing education. So there's very little opportunity for staff development, but they work very hard. They work long hours, low wages, and they often don't have the resources that they need.
I know there's a lot of work being done nationwide to develop and train and do some retraining of workers in the long-term care field. What are some of the initiatives that are going on?
Yeah, there's some very interesting efforts. There are two issues, really. One is recruitment and one is retention of workers. And I think the focus used to be on recruitment. Let's find more and more workers. But it's like a hole in the bottom of the boat. People kept leaving because the conditions are so difficult to work under. So focus has now shifted really more towards retention of workers. So they're doing all kinds of things. Certainly wages is one. But interview, if you ask workers in these settings what will keep them there or why they're leaving, wages is as low as they are, it's not the first thing on the list. They'll talk about things like no opportunities for continuing education, no opportunities for advancement. So most of the initiatives now relate to professional development, for example, career ladders. So CNAs can now take courses, take exams, and move up into a greater level of responsibility, a wider range of activities that they're responsible for. So there's some real personal pride in doing that.
Our guest today, Professor Barbara Bowers, Associate Dean for Research and the Helen Dunn Schulte Professor in the UW-Madison School of Nursing, as we talk with her about nursing homes, employment, and long-term care. Join in with your question or comment at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Jen in Manitowoc for a call now. Jen, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Hi, I am a nursing student currently, scheduled to graduate with an RN associate's degree. And in my area, the nursing homes, long-term care facilities employ on the average of one RN per facility. Everything else is done by RN, LPNs and CNAs. I'm currently in the hospital setting working as a CNA. And if I were to just graduate with an LPN, I wouldn't have a job at that facility. So it's kind of, we're kind of tied up here, you know. I mean, we want to do a good job and make more money, but there's really no, a very slim chance of me getting a job in long-term care as an RN.
Yeah, this is a sad and very good point. Because of the reimbursement rates in long-term care, a lot of nursing homes have, as you've just explained, gone to more and more LVNs and fewer RNs. So there are a lot of people in your position who want to go back, learn more, be more competent, have greater skills, but then they really educate themselves out of the positions that they wanted to be in nursing homes. So it's a real problem. Which is why it can't be solved at the local level. There are homes that will hire RNs. I don't know in your area, but there certainly are homes all over Wisconsin that are looking for RNs. So please don't give up. We need people like you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really important. But you're right. With low reimbursement rates, it's cheaper to hire people who have an LVN rather than an RN. Not a lot cheaper, but it's cheaper. So it saves the organization's money.
And these LPNs are just swamped with work,
right,
too. I mean,
right,
they're chasing around, and they're very, very dedicated.
Right. But it's a different set of skills, as hopefully
is.
You see.
Yes.
RNs have a higher level of assessment skills, more management skills, and they're really the ones who oversee and are responsible for the work. LVNs have wonderful training, but it's more technical care, direct hands-on care. And so you need both.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jen, for calling. Steve and Phillips, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I was wanting to say, you know, I worked in a few nursing homes throughout the state, and I've seen what these nurses and the nurses' aides, I see what they do all day, and these people are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The things they do for these elderly people, the level of commitment and the patience they have to have with these people, I mean, they are way underpaid.
Yes.
I salute these people, especially if they decide to stay where they are, because it is heartbreaking for them to leave, especially after developing relationships. My friend, who was an LPN, she finally quit because all the people she became close with, they keep dying on her, and that's very hard on the nurses, too.
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up a couple of really important points. I mean, it's it's tough work. We do lose people because we need resources and support in the facilities that are simply not there. And for example, they do, the staff does identify residents dying as one of the emotionally more challenging aspects of the work, both nurses and nurse aides. And, you know, there are things that people can do to bring in support. There are hospice programs that can be brought in. You become like family members. And to have those repeated losses make the job very, very challenging. Yeah. So that's another area where we can do a lot more in terms of supporting workers. The support of the workers is a huge issue. And I just want to agree with you completely. Anyone listening who works in long-term care, these folks are committed, hardworking. They're wonderful.
Yeah, they really are. Thank you, Steve, for calling. I appreciate your call. And I want to give Fred in Wisconsin Dells a chance to participate as well. Fred, hello to you.
Good morning. I'm basically just calling. I'm a registered nurse. I work for a long-term company that's well-known throughout the state. We've got it's nationalized. And, you know, the commitment that I see every day, I go facility to facility, helping out with audits, just to ensure quality care, and the commitment and the resources that our company that is able to do it is just unbelievable. We started, I believe it was 2 years ago, with a DCE position or a director of clinical education to get out there and educate the nurses to provide the best quality of care, and the hours that they put in it is just, I have not seen it in hospitals or anywhere else, not to say that, you know, the commitment isn't there, but the commitment for the elderly that we have is just unbelievable. You know, and the resource that we're pouring into greater education, which is a wound care certification that we've joined forces with to help with bed sores and the reduction, the money that we've poured in, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think you've hit a really important area, and that is continuing education. That's one of the things that both nurses and nurse aides identify as really making their job good quality or very frustrating, which is having the skills and knowledge to do the work in front of them. There's nothing more upsetting than having a resident who you're very attached to who has a health problem and you don't have the skills, the knowledge, or the resources to do what you need to do. So I agree with you. And there is a huge effort. I want to say Wisconsin has some pretty good nursing homes. You know, there are problems. Every state has some problem homes, and we certainly have ours, but there are a lot of really interesting, very, very important initiatives going on in Wisconsin, and leading the way really in terms of educational programs. The Wellspring program, which started in sort of mid or northern Wisconsin, is a nice example of really developing a very different kind of educational support system and including everybody in it. So I'm sure there are some listeners out there who either work in them or have family members in Wellspring homes. But that's one of the initiatives. It's a real Wisconsin born.
And it's an educational support, or is it?
It's a way of creating teamwork.
Okay.
Nursing homes are sort of famous for having people work in isolation. One person gets assigned several residents, you go take care of them, and you get your own work done. And really, there's not a lot of interdependency among workers. The Wellspring program, which started about 10 or 12 years ago in northern Wisconsin, is a program that said, okay, we need to create better work teams. We need to work together. So it created teams at several levels to focus on common clinical problems in nursing homes, like pressure ulcers, the wounds that the caller was just talking about, falls, weight loss, things that are common problems. And it included workers at all levels. The frontline workers, the nursing assistants, are the ones who are most often left out of the planning, the decision-making, the learning.
And we'll talk some more about that. Our guest today, Barbara Bauer, is Associate Dean for Research in the UW-Madison School of Nursing, here on the Ideas Network. Talking about nursing homes, employment, and long-term care issues today with Barbara Bowers, Associate Dean for Research and the Helen Dunn Schulte Professor in the UW-Madison School of Nursing, our guest today. If you have a question or a comment as we move along, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And an email came in, as a matter of fact, Dean Bowers, from Kay in New Glarus, who says, my mother-in-law has dementia, has been in assisted living for 3.5 years. Currently, her care is over $6,000 a month. Very fortunate. She bought long-term care policy years ago. It's paid for itself many times over. It's an excellent policy. I don't even know if they still have this type, but hers doesn't have any time limits. Pays up a certain amount every day.
Yeah, really important issue. Long-term care insurance has been around for, I think, probably about 15 years. When the policies first came out, they actually weren't very good. They focused on really acute sort of skilled level care, things like bed sores and things that were very more physical problems. And really, people need long-term care primarily for dementia, which is more supervision, providing activities for people, but somebody who really needs to be monitored. And the first ones didn't actually cover that, so they weren't worth much. They have improved tremendously over the years. There are some very good policies now. And deciding whether or not you want to buy one is a pretty complicated issue. It has a lot to do with what resources you have, financial resources, the family members you have to help out providing care, family philosophy, if you have an extended family and people can help out. Sometimes families think that one person, and it's often an older spouse, can provide care to someone with dementia for a long period of time and actually just drains and exhausts the other person. Very difficult. It's sometimes a 24-hour-a-day job, and it's not possible for any one person to do that. So long-term care insurance policies can be quite important. That also brings up another issue about the cost of long-term care, which I think it really stuns people when they find out. The caller said the home that her mother is in is $6,000 a month. It's a little high, but not. It's certainly within the range of the usual prices for long-term care facilities. And of course, the more you pay, the more services, and the more generally you, when you pay more, it's because there's more staff in a place, and staff is probably the most important ingredient to high-quality care. So, $40,000-$50,000 isn't at all unusual for providing care for someone long-term. Now, most people don't have several years of that kind of money to put into long-term care. So long-term care insurance policies are important. A lot of things to look at. Look at the eligibility. When can you actually use it? What are the things that it covers? What are the pre-existing conditions? For example, you want to make sure that you don't get a policy that requires all kinds of to meet all kinds of criteria in order to pay off. You want one like the caller suggested, or the person who emailed suggested, doesn't have a time limit. Some people like policies that will allow you to bring care into your home, or some of them will pay family members to provide the care. So all options to think about.
Let's go to Roger in Fitchburg now. Roger, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi, I have an opinion. Let's see if I'm right on this. Esther gets about it. It's my impression that we have a lot of immigrants doing this work because they are often better educated and willing to do the work at lower pay. I think it might be a lower cost to society if we might tighten up the borders a bit, but have social policy that would beef up education and pay for domestics to do this work with the elderly.
Couple questions there. I think you're correct in that there are a lot of people who are from around the world, many from the Philippines, but other countries as well, who are working in the U.S. in these positions, especially the frontline positions. And by the way, a lot of them are licensed professionals in their home country. For example, we have a lot of Filipino nurses and doctors who are working as nurse aides in nursing homes around the country, from China, other countries. So it's, in a sense, a very highly skilled group of people providing care in a pretty low-paid, low-skilled job. So that's probably somewhat of a plus. Probably not a great experience for people doing that because they're working way below their education level. There are issues, I think, that are really important in terms of culture and language, though, for older people. I mean, if you can imagine what it's like to have dementia or to have a hearing problem and to be taken care of by someone who doesn't speak English well. So I think there are some issues to consider there. On the other hand, they're often excellent caregivers. So I'm sort of sidestepping the immigration question.
That's all right. You can do that. But what about one of the things or some of the initiatives are to train more people, all
right.
types of people,
right.
really.
Well, that gets back to the leak in the bottom of the boat phenomenon here. We keep training people and they keep leaving. The turnover rate is, people are always surprised to hear this, the average annual turnover rate in of frontline workers, the nurse aides in long-term care, is somewhere around 70%.
Well,
so it's a massive turnover. Now, there are people who stay and positions that turn over several times a year, which sort of alters those, it has an influence on those statistics. But nevertheless, there is a huge turnover rate in these facilities, and that has cost implications. You got to train and orient people. And, you know, there are some facilities that with high turnover rates, I think, why would we put a lot of money into education when people are only going to be there for a short period of time? So the investment isn't very sound. So those are problems. On the other hand, people stay longer if they're better educated and better prepared for the work. So it's sort of a real chicken and egg phenomenon, yeah. which is why you can see there's a lot of effort that's put into what is it we can do to entice people, support them to stay longer. And I think from my years of experience in the industry, I would say that certainly staffing is an issue. Wisconsin has a better staffing ratio than a lot of states. I know there are some, and I'm not going to name them, that have where CNAs, nursing assistants, will say they have 15 residents to take care of. Now, if you can imagine being responsible for 15 people who are completely dependent on you to get dressed, to eat, to get to the bathroom, to get out of bed, to roll over when they want to, nobody can take care of 15
no.
people. I
no.
mean, one is a challenge. 15 no. is absurd. The average is probably about 7 or 8. So even 7 or 8 is huge. The math doesn't work when you think yeah. about what the caregiving responsibilities are. So education, support, increased staffing are all things that need to be changed.
Thanks for calling, Roger. Wendy and Kimberly, will go to you next. Wendy, hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Dean, I am fortunate enough to be a student in the baccalaureate nursing program at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh.
Great.
And I've been very impressed with our curriculum and how much attention and focus it gives to consideration for our older population. You did cover quite a few points that I was going to make with answering your last question about how important the education is to not only attract qualified, compassionate people into these positions, but also to retain them. Mm. One thing that I think is so important for our residents in long-term care is being able to develop those relationships with their care staff. It's just so critical to their not only physical well-being, but emotional health as well.
Mm. You're absolutely right. There's been a lot of studies where researchers have interviewed, talked to people who live in long-term care settings, live in nursing homes, and every study I've seen and the studies that I have done have shown the same finding every time, which is the most important component of quality of life, quality of care for people who live there are the relationships with the staff. They become family. We just talked about turnover. You can imagine what turnover does to someone who has developed a very close relationship with a caregiver. The care is very intimate. The relationships become quite intimate, and there's a lot of affection. And then somebody just can't deal with the work situation anymore and leaves. And it's devastating for both the worker and the resident. It's a real serious problem. I'm delighted to hear your curriculum has both content but also a positive attitude towards older adults. The Hartford Foundation a few years ago did a survey of nursing schools around the country and found that there were many of them that had no formal content on aging older adults, and very few dealt with long-term care as a real career option. So I think the universities and nursing schools have a lot to do to make this better. Hartford Foundation actually has a wonderful website. If anybody wants to go there, it's free, open to the public, all kinds of hints, tips on how to take care of different clinical problems. This would be perfectly relevant for family members as well as nursing students. So mm-hmm. that's a good resource to look at.
All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you.
I appreciate it very much. Trudy in Harper's. Are you there, Trudy?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Hi, Trudy.
Hi. Yeah, I'm over in Harper's Ferry. I have a question about foot care for nursing home residents. Are there paraprofessionals who do that, or how is that handled?
Well, it depends on what the problem is. Certainly, if it's an open wound, that requires a licensed professional. But there's some basic foot care, and I'm not sure what you're referring to. Is it a particular issue?
No, I was just thinking of, general maintenance mm-hmm. kind of care.
Right. That's certainly an area that all nursing home staff should know about, be aware of. I mean, it has to do with what sort of, what you put on people's feet to begin. What you put on their feet, what kind of socks, how you get well-fitting shoes. I mean, that both has to do with as people's circulation is compromised a bit as they age or if they have problems like diabetes. You need specialized foot care to prevent them from getting like foot ulcers,
sure.
but also for falls. I would think that's just fundamental knowledge that anyone working in a nursing home should have.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Occasionally I've seen ads for, people that will go in and do that kind of care. And I wasn't sure if they had, the staff do it or if other people came in and did it. I know I'm sure it varies.
Yeah.
Again, it depends on what it is. If you're talking, a lot of times you're talking about nail clipping there, which is a particular issue for people with diabetes or some circulatory problems in their feet. You can actually, if you just have a tiny little nick from cutting someone's nails, which often get thickened with less vascular supply to the area, so they're harder to cut. And if you cause a little bit of a nick or a problem and you have impaired circulation, it can become a very serious wound. So
wow.
There are people who specialize in nail clipping. I mean, some people laugh at that, but it's actually a very important thing to do. To keep people's toenails short so that they can wear shoes properly so that they don't fall. So it's sort of a whole host of problems that are taken care of by good, sound foot care.
Hmm. I see. Is that a paraprofessional then who does that specialty type of stuff? Or?
I don't know. What I have seen mostly are nurses and podiatrists doing that, but that doesn't mean they're the only ones who can.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Trudy. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
And we'll turn to Brittany in Green Bay next. Brittany, hello to you.
Hi. My dad is in a nursing home, and it's a short-term. He's not that old. He's just 62, but he had a bad head injury. He didn't have any choice but to go to a nursing home in the area that was rated the lowest because all the other nursing homes were full. And now he's in the hospital due to severe dehydration that aggravated a urinary tract infection, and he almost died. He had organ failure, and he's on the mend. However, I'm really hesitant to put him back in that nursing home, but no other beds have opened up anywhere else. So other than transferring him to a different city, are there any other options that I have at this time? Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a real problem. I can see why you're reluctant to put him back in the same place. I mean, the problems you described are the sort of problems that are considered real red flag quality problems for a facility. There is no excuse for someone to become dehydrated who's recovering. I mean, it's different if people are at the end of their life and they're not, you take care of them differently, and often people do become dehydrated. But this is, what you're talking about is really kind of inexcusably bad care. I assume, have you talked to the state ombudsman? Have you?
That's next in line.
Yeah.
It's real recent that he's put in the hospital.
Right. Yeah. I would do that, and I would lobby really hard. I mean, you can talk to the discharge planner to find another place. I actually probably would go to another city if I wouldn't put him back in the same nursing home. I mean, that's just a real red flag.
No.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Brittany, for calling, and good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck.
John in Tomahawk, we're on to you now. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how can we help you?
I just keep hear her referring to the wages that aren't paid accordingly, and I thought she said it costs $6,000 a month for one resident. If there's one person taking care of five people, $30,000 a month. Maybe she could explain where that money is going.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I don't deal with the cost end of these things much, but I can tell you that there is, if you look at a nursing home, the charges that you're paying are for, first of all, it's accommodation. So you're paying rent because it's a building, you're living there. There are staff there 24 hours a day. There's an administrative staff. There's a many places, an education staff, quality improvement staff, the frontline staff. There are lots of compliance issues, fire codes, all kinds of things. Now, a lot of the, I think, the increase in costs recently have been related to building renovations. There's a real movement around the country to change the physical structure of nursing homes. They used to look very hospital institutional-like. They're now looking more like somebody's home or apartment, a much more comfortable environment. That requires a huge investment in rehabbing buildings, which is often more expensive than building them in the first place. There's a dietary staff, and there are heaps of state and federal regulations about information systems, oversight systems, the staffing level that has to be there. So it's just you're layering one thing on top of another. So it looks, I mean, it doesn't look, it looks like you've just got a CNA taking care of somebody, but you've got the nursing staff, the PT staff, the OT staff, the dietary.
The physical plan itself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There you have it. Thank you very much, John. Jill in Menominee, and we're on to you now. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Menominee is in Dunn County, and we have one of about 40 county nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're facing a huge deficit, as many of the other county
the rest of the world.
Yeah. But one of our problems is that medical assistance mm-hmm. does not cover the cost.
Right.
And the state used to pass on at the end of each year medical assistance dollars they got from federal government. Now they're using most of that money for other things.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, from your perspective in the university system, what's going to happen to all of these county nursing homes? And, of course, we're unionized. We have mm-hmm. Well-paid staff, which I think they
which
deserve.
Is great. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Barb.
First of all, I want to say that the county homes in Wisconsin have a reputation for excellent care. So that's great. The buildings generally aren't all that nice. They're older buildings, but the care is actually quite well known for being really good. I think I started this today by talking about the low reimbursement levels. The federal and state government reimbursement to nursing homes is simply not enough to do the job. It's very difficult. It has been for a while, and it's even more so now to get any kind of increases in those rates. And as you're pointing out, supplementary dollars from other sources that used to go towards the industry are not anymore. And there's a lot of competition. Some people are saying, let's move the care into the home. People don't want to go into nursing homes. So money goes in that direction. If we pay people more, that takes some of the money. So I think no matter how you do the math on this, there's more money that needs to go into long-term care to get the quality that I think people deserve, quality work setting and quality of care. So that's a huge issue. I wish I had an answer for your question and solve the problem, but I think there's simply not enough money going in to do what people are expected to do and what they want to do.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, and some there have even been some referendums around the state on whether or not to close a county facility and or whether or not the county taxpayers are going to pick up the extra tab for it.
Right. There have been. And, you know, this is a time when people aren't very supportive for tax money going anywhere new. So it's a problem. Boy, I would fight really hard to keep the county facilities open, though. And I think unionizing is actually something that is probably going to happen more and more. You know, it happens in any industry when the workers are don't have great working conditions and the benefits are either very inconsistent or low, you're going to get unionizing. And I think that's probably a really important thing to happen. And I would suggest to people in the union in this industry. Keep control of it. Don't hand it off to others outside the healthcare industry. When you lobby for the kinds of things you want, they need to be related to healthcare, to the work environment, and to the things that are important to the workers. And that often doesn't happen when you get handed off to a union that oversees all kinds of industries. They tend to focus on things that aren't so important to the workers.
Yeah. Somebody was wondering, how do you determine in the last minute and a half or so, how do you determine a good facility from a bad facility?
Okay, good question. I'm surprised that didn't come up first, actually. I just want to direct people to a website that's actually quite good. It's medicare.gov, NH Compare. That is a federal website that the federal government has put together, and it's been around for probably 10 years, but it's really developed nicely. There are all kinds of resources, and it does actually address the question you just asked. There's even a checklist to look at nursing homes there. But if you have to look at one thing, I would say look at the staffing level and call the state ombudsman to find out if there have been complaints against the home and the nature of the complaints.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to have you come by, Barbara, today and talk with us. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to another visit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara Bowers is Associate Dean for Research and the Helen Dunn Schulte Professor in the University of Wisconsin Madison School of Nursing. Lots of issues here. We'd like to pay people and train them well and keep them. At the same time, it's a costly effort on the family side. So there are so many issues that have to be considered, and we'll be taking more looks at this down the road, certainly. Well, Friday coming up tomorrow, and that's a day for Garden Talk. And Bruce Allison, professional arborist and the author of If Trees Could Talk, he's got a children's version of that book out. So we'll talk with him about that, and we'll also talk with him about your trees. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.